listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kolula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio. Wake Up Hollywood, this is your host with the most, Nikki Kolula. We're going to jump right into this episode of Wake Up Hollywood. We have singer-songwriter and frontman for a really great up-and-coming country band, Mr. James Graves. James Graves, I should say. Correct?
Correct, that's correct.
I first said James Grave, but you know what? It was too grave.
It happens all the time, and some people think I say gray. And so I had to go, no, it's like a graveyard, but not so scary. And then they get it. Like, oh, it's Graves.
You have a country name, man. That is like as country name as you can get.
Oh, good, good. Well, I actually was, I grew up out here in California, but I was born in Texas. And so, and I lived there I only lived there till I was five. So I don't know if maybe just something in the water enough. But
What city in Texas do you remember?
Amarillo, Texas.
Okay, that's as Texas as you can get, man. That counts for sure.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. 100%.
And then did you move to Lancaster from Amarillo?
Amarillo, and yes, my parents moved from there, and so my dad worked at the refineries, Phillips 66.
Wow.
Refineries out there in Texas, and then he got into the environmental business from that knowledge over here in California, which is a lot of environmental business out here in California. And so I grew up out here since I was five.
And so, like, I saw in your bio you did a lot of like sketch and comedy shows. So you were doing musical theater. What was the first moment of zen that you remember like loving music or wanting to become a musician?
You know, it's kind of funny, is like I tell this story. I'm a teacher by day too, and I auditioned for the honor choir when I was in sixth grade, and I auditioned for the Aladdin solo. And it was the first time I heard myself sing. And so I sang, and it was the first time I thought I did so bad. I just handed the mic to the kid behind me, and I ran home crying. I was supposed to be picked up. I busted the door. My mom was like, "What are you doing here?" I was like, "I sounded awful." But then the next day, I was walking around, and kids were like, "That's the one that sounded good." And I ended up getting the part. I was like,
"That's
oh my God,
awesome." So what made you think it was so bad? You were just self-critical?
I think just hearing my voice amplified. And, you know, when you do it for the first time, you know, I grew up singing in church and stuff, but you're not singing solo on the mic. And so I never had heard my own voice. You know, that moment, like, I've accepted what my voice sounds like now. But
I call it the answering machine syndrome, because it's like,
yes,
everybody like hears themselves speaking, and then they hear themselves on an answering machine. They're like, wait, what? That's what I sound like? So it's natural, yeah. You know, because you don't realize how you sound.
You don't. But I always attribute everything back to that, because that just, I mean, that really changed the trajectory of my confidence and my interests, and I felt fearless after that. So I always give a lot of credit to my teachers.
You're like, as long as I think I don't sound good, things are going to happen for me.
Well, there's always that artist like self doubt and self hate, right? For artists, you gotta have that too. So you got to be grounded and a dreamer at the same time.
It's so difficult, because it's like one of those things where you don't realize how like the imposter syndrome thing can seep into what we do creatively. But really, 100%. Like, none of that has anything to do with art. Like, art is about expression and technique, mm-hmm. and then even learning technique and throwing it out the window so it becomes free form, and just like, it just becomes you. So it's one of those things that you can't really pay attention too much to it. So you get this solo. Did you start falling in love with country music, or has that always been played at the house? Like, what was the influence there?
It was, I mean, at first it was, I mean, it was a, a lot of music. I'm a 90s teenager, so it's like, I mean, I was influenced a lot by just different songwriters. I felt that was a good time to be a teenager because you have like the Wallflowers and Counting Crows and all these people. It was, you know, Alanis Morissette. It was like lyric driven. But at that time, that was when Garth Brooks was like blowing up. And so my mom was like, oh, you should listen to this. And so I started listening to Garth Brooks and like Tim McGraw and like these stories. And especially being like a theater kid too, it was like no other music told stories like country music the way that. So it was kind of like this transition. It's like, okay, I like this musical because I was part of that generation growing up on Lion King and Aladdin. So that really affected my childhood. But like now these country stories, these stories about grandpa, these stories about falling in love, these stories about family and different things. So it's just like, I just fell in love with that type of music, you know. And then my dad, of course, he was a Springsteen fan. So that's like, lyric driven too.
That's all good. Those are all good influences. You know what I mean?
It's
like musical theater. I came from the world of opera. So like, musical theater was like a huge influence for me to have an outlet. And then it was like, jazz and rock and country and blues. Mm-hmm. All of it is like all good because it's just colors that you're kind of drawing from that influence, you know, musical ideas. Did you start writing songs then?
I mean, I didn't really start writing until I was in a college because I was doing theater and acting all through high school, and it wasn't until I wanted to start a band with my brother and just be the singer, and my brother was a drummer, and he kind of looked at me, this is in high school, and he goes, I'm not gonna effing start a band with you if you're just gonna sing. It's like, you gotta learn an instrument, man. And so I taught myself guitar, and then he still never wanted to be in a band because he doesn't like country.
That's not cool. He totally gave you the bait. He's like, if you learn an instrument, we can start a band. Then you're like, I'm going to put in all this time. Then he's like, sorry, man, you didn't make the cut, bro.
You didn't make the cut. And he's my younger brother. So I think it's always like that brotherly competition thing. Right. But we're super close. But it was a funny thing at the time where I was like, hey, I learned the guitar. And he's like, yeah, you don't play the kind of music I like.
I also am a 90s kid. So like, I love the Counting Crows. The Wallflowers are great. I actually just saw both of those bands. And Dave Matthews was like a big influence because he came out of that same era. And, you know, what I loved about that era was it was a lot of bands, like playing music, playing an instrument, writing your own songs. That's what became the thing. Now it's like very different. It's like you have so many writers writing songs for artists. It's like almost rare that an artist writes their own tune. So
100%.
I love that you come from that old school where it's like, artists should write their own songs, because I believe in that. I'm like, artists should write your own songs, not have a team of writers. Like, write your own songs. I'm all for being a writer in a room like that to write for somebody else. But I also believe that you should be able to do it if you're an artist, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I love collaborating with other writers, but I know what you're saying. It's like there's 12 people on one hit song because they're all refining it. But, you know, I grew up thinking like, oh, man, okay, well, you know, the Wallflowers and Jewel and Alanis Morissette, and like they're writing all their own songs. And then my parents, they're listening to Bruce Springsteen and John Mellencamp and James Taylor. I was like, so it's just, I was just surrounded with multiple generations of songwriters. And so those are always just the kind of stories like, that's what songwriting is. That's, if I'm going to do that, I want to be like those people.
And did you ever start a country band before you eventually started your country band that you're in now?
You know what? This was like, I just kind of did the solo thing for a long time, like on and off of like, I'll be the jukebox in the corner playing my favorite songs. And I would write a few here and there. They didn't, some aged okay, some did not age okay. Like, because you know, you got to write 100 songs for one good song.
Well, I mean, it's also like you have to just write to just get them out. Mm-hmm. And also, the funny thing is, like, I always tell people, like, who's to say the songs that you think are good or bad are good or bad? Because you, once the song is finished, it's no longer yours. It's like up to the public to decide if it's good or bad, you know? So that barometer is really tough, you know?
It's funny you said that, because there was one time I'd been playing and doing my own just cover gigs for a long time, and I wrote a group of songs and I got someone to listen to it, and they said, okay, you can open up for this other band, original band at this bar. And I made the mistake of introducing every song and talking about it like it was a storytellers or songwriter show, which is cool, right. But that wasn't what the gig was for. And but I learned is like, okay, if you're an accomplished artist, if you're Bruce Springsteen, they want to know how you wrote it. But if you're not, but they're not so interested. But I did remember, I thought, I just robbed everyone the experience to interpret the songs for themselves.
Right.
They're just hearing, rather than hearing like, oh, me define everything for them. Because there is a certain magic of like someone listens to those words and they could have a completely different meaning because they're attributing their own life's experiences to those phrases rather than telling them what to say. Yes,
especially exactly. With a country song, because it's like you can interpret one thing to mean so many different things in a country song, which is what I love about country songs, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But then it was fast forward, then it was playing those more. I got a gig opening up for another band at the Canyon in Santa Clarita, and a friend of mine said, hey, man, you should have a band behind you. And I was like, hey, if you want to start one, I'm down. And then it kind of like waterfalled into like meeting other people around town and in my area, like saying, hey, I want to start a working country band and it's going to mostly be covers. And even at that time, I wasn't like, oh, I'm ready to write songs. I just wanted to have a successful working band because whenever I have a project, I'm a dad, I'm a teacher. But no matter if I dive into something, I want to see how far can I take this? Okay, I'm at this level now. Can I take it a little bit farther? Oh, how do I make a better band? How do I get a better gig? And just kind of like keeps going. So because people ask me, well, are you trying to get famous? It's like, if that's a thing later, great. But like there's so many steps and so many small successes to have. I just, what's the next level? What's the next thing from there? Like, oh, I'm going to make a music video. Okay, well, how do you make a music video? How do you make a better music video? Right. Like, what's the next thing after that? Like, oh, how do I get a song on the radio? How do I get on a playlist? You know?
Well, I also think, like, what's interesting about that, it's like, you know, I still get the rush of just going to rehearsal with a new song. There's something about just, like, writing a new song that even your band hasn't heard, and then you get it all together for the first time. It's like... Mm-hmm. No, nothing gets better to me than just that. It's like I realize so much of like what I do as an artist when it comes to performances or just writing songs or making records is trying to like just get the word out. Like, look how cool this little incubator rehearsal space demo is. And eventually you're all going to hear it at a show or, you know, more online in a recording. But it's like it comes down to that incubator space for me, where you just like write a song and you're like rushing to rehearsal and you're like, I got something. And then you hear your band's response to it. And then everybody starts playing. There's nothing cooler to me than that. When you see everybody shaping parts to something you wrote and it becomes much bigger than what you ever thought it could be. Than you just sitting at home and playing it. That still is the rush, you know?
That I have to say, like, I'm 100% behind that, because writing the songs when I was doing the solo stuff was fun. And then getting to see a reaction is like, it's cool. But when you bring it to other musicians who you respect and you work with and you see, well, one, first that they think it's good enough that they want to add anything to it.
Right.
That's the first validation, is like, okay, I'm not wrong. There's something here. And then when they take it in other directions and they're adding ingredients, and now suddenly you're baking this cake, this whole new recipe in this song. It's taken to a whole level that I can't take it on my own.
Right.
You know what I mean? So,
well, it's also, you're also going to get some musicians that are like, they'll be like, yeah, I don't really like it. And it's like, whoa, wait, you just heard it. Like, let's like take some time with it. Like, don't just cut it off. Like, you just heard it, because there could be something there that somebody doesn't see right away. And that happens all the time. Like,
There's
songs that resonate with people that, you know, some band members that I had that are no longer in the band, you know, may have not liked right away. And it's like, I don't jive with that, because it's like, if you create something, I want to feel something, but I'm going to have to feel something that's going to marinate. It may take a while. It's like, you're not going to know right away. There's no way. It's like, you have to take time sometimes.
I do. That's why, even though I haven't had a lot of bands experience, I do look back, like I did Groundlings, and which was sketch and improv in college, and then I did I did some stand-up comedy. And, like, some of that, those muscles, like what you're saying, it's like, just because the joke didn't hit in this room, it doesn't mean it's not a good joke. Right. And it's like, okay, or maybe I need to just adjust it. I need to twist it because something about it I still think is there. And then sometimes it's like, hey, I get it. I have to cut this. And so sometimes that resilience and knowing how things hit different people, that's really helped me in my songwriting process.
I love that you said that too, because like stand-up comedians will whittle. They'll whittle and whittle and whittle a joke until it's totally perfect. Mm-hmm. And then once it's perfect and they get all the laughs they want, they're over it and they're on to the next. Whittling, you know what I mean? Yeah. So tell me how that's kind of improved or helped your songwriting. You were
tremendously. I mean, because I mean, one, I would do song improv. So that's become a giant thing, is just being comfortable. Like, hey, I'm basically improvising a song until I find lyrics that I like. Cause I'm not a good enough guitarist to make this beautiful melody I'm not a good enough guitarist to make this rhymes and poetry and then add beautiful music to. It's like, I need to find the groove and feel it. And then I'm kind of improvising a song over it. So I kind of like start with a melody on my song or a chord progression or something or a vibe. And then I just start singing over it until I have like, okay, that's the vibe. That's the kind of melody I want. And then I just start spitting out different lyrics, you know, but I have a million things written down on my phone. So it's like, I have things to try, like, oh, that's kind of in this mood. Let me try that line. Let me try that line. Let me try that thought. But like, normally I don't, Tom Petty, I watch a lot of music documentaries. He's like, I don't ever just sit down and think I'm going to write a song about a dog. Right. I sit down, I start grooving, and then the song is there. And I'm just starting to like, push away the clay and the song like exists. I'm just moving things around, and that visual just always sticks with me. So whenever I'm sitting down, that's why I think I was like, where's the song? And I'm gonna find it in here. The song already exists somewhere. I'm just gonna find it.
Well, and what do you usually draw from? Is it like life stories that you're going through? Is it stories that you read about or see on TV? Is it, so like, what strikes you to kind of make you want to become a writer?
I mean, honestly, it's a lot of personal stuff, which I'm sure a lot of songwriters say. I'm divorced and remarried, so I have a lot of things, you know, that have to do with that.
You got like 5 albums there, man.
Yeah, I got 5 albums, you know. But it's interesting because I want to, like, you know, you start in a very real place and real emotions, and then, but not everything has to be autobiographical. Sometimes it's like, hey, I'm going to talk about how alcoholism affected this relationship, but it may not be exactly how it was in my relationships, right, but I've experienced that. And now, okay, but now it might take form, and, you know, sometimes I'm going to switch places. I'm going to be the other side of it, or, you know, and like, and I'll go from there. And then I'm also a dad. So I have just, you know, there was one time I was so, I'm going to choke up if I think about it. I was so distant from my oldest daughter. It just was killing me. And I just sat, and I'm kind of like crying the whole time. And I just started playing something. And I just started talking about how being a dad, being patient when your kid is far away, is kind of like being like a lighthouse. I didn't even send you that song, but I wrote this song about like, hey, sometimes my job is just to be steady and be here for when my kid needs me, even if she doesn't really want to be around me right now. And then hopefully they come back. And I just felt it. It's a very simple song, but I mean, it was everything I was feeling. Whether people were going to like that song or not, like, it was like a prayer. Like, I need to write this song for myself.
Well, I don't know how you can't like a song like that. Like, yeah. I always look for perspectives and songs. Like, if you can give me a perspective that makes me go, whoa, that's all I look for in a song. So it doesn't matter if I don't have, you know, like 20 kids or if I have zero, a song can give you that empathy and feeling that I do have 20 kids or I don't.
Yeah, exactly. Like
what the perspective of the song is. So I love that you write from that place. It's super honest. And that's the way I think songwriters should write from. It's like, I mean, there's enough music out there where it's like so much stuff trying to be something it's not, that it's so refreshing when songwriters just write from a place of like honesty, where it's like, I'm feeling this way. I want to write this and document it before it leaves. And processing that emotion like makes us better people, You know what I mean? Yeah. I kind of feel like it makes us less angry or less depressed if we can kind of channel that energy into something beautiful. I think that's one of the greatest things about art in general. It's like,
yeah,
you take emotions that suck sometimes and turn it into something so pretty and then play it for the rest of your life. You know what I mean? It's
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
You know,
I'm just going to break out. I'm just going to break out my, spill my heart all over the stage for you.
Yes, no matter what, that's what it's about. I mean, that's really what it's about. Let's play something first. What do you want to play as first? We got Livewire, Joshua Tree's Westbound Train.
Let's play Westbound Train. That's I wrote that song for my wife. That's like, I wrote that about my wife's difficult childhood and stuff. And it's a rock. It's a cool upbeat. It's got a great beat, but it's about like real stuff. And so I really love that one. And it's our first single that my band did that we released.
And the band's called Westbound 66, right?
Yes. And so it was kind of like Westbound 66 releases Westbound Train.
I like it. Here's Westbound Train by Westbound 66.
Another sleepy town where dreams are really bound. She's young and dreaming anyway. Her daddy's long gone. She never knew a nun. And mama sleeps all damn day. They say it's such a shame, like that's her end game. But she got plans of her own. She wants a brand new start for her hungry heart. Her bags are packed, she's leaving today. She's gonna take it on a westbound train. Out there down the line, she knows that she'll find something better than what they had in mind. She finds that sunset, and her heart says this is it. She can hear it call her name on a westbound train. That takes her out, but the walls are paper thin. She was just a pretty face, one for him to chase, but he's bored and out again. He thought this was enough, especially where she came from, but he never really thought she'd go. She didn't come this far to sell her heart. Love's not supposed to feel this way. She's leaving on a westbound train. Out there down the line, she knows that she can find something better than what they had in mind. She finds that sunset, and her heart says this is it. She can hear it calling her name on a westbound train. she can hear, she can hear it calling her name.
Very nice. That was cool. The little outro was nice.
Thank you.
So tell me, like, what went down with production? Like, tell me one of the better parts of that experience for you when you're tracking it. Tell me some. Tell me a story about recording. What went into all of it?
Oh man, so that was a big learning experience for us as a band, because like we've played for so long, like doing the honky tonk circuits and line dancing and stuff. I'd written a bunch of songs, and that was the one that. So we're a six-piece band, so Westbound 66, I have two female vocalists that they also do leads, and they add harmonies to everything, which is really, like, the special sauce for us, because most bands in my circuit don't have multiple vocals like that, and definitely not two girls, and they each have their own flavor, which makes it awesome. And then we have Don Bakeman's our lead guitarist. So anyway.
Yeah, that was the guy I just met, right?
Yeah, so Don Bakeman was at the show with me.
Was that his solo? That was him soloing?
That was his solo.
Good solo, yeah.
Very cool. In there. So he's our lead guitarist. Tina Guzman and Chelsea, I always mess up her last name, Udagger. It's one of those special names, and it's me being bad about it. So, but those are female vocalists, and I have Frank Welga on the bass. And then Max Taylor, who you know, who's part of the Taylor family, is our drummer. And so the production, this all we recorded the vocals. We built a blanket fort in my garage to record the vocals. So that's why we call it Blanket Fort Records. It's like, awesome. We sang that stuff in a blanket fort. And then we did the mixing in there, so Don did the mixing of that. And then Max did the final mastering for us, but everything after that now, because Max has his own he has a studio, our future record singles and stuff, we've recorded at his place with the tracks and vocals here, and he'll do the mixing and mastering and stuff. But it's very much like we were saying, like the other musicians adding their fingerprints on the song and elevating the song, you know, the girls adding more harmony and going, you know, maybe I'm thinking, oh, we should go down. They're like, oh, we should go up here and we can make it a three part here.
Yeah, it's cool. I added a lot. And you know, it's cool. Like, some of the harmonies together sounded like a train, you know, like the train harmonies.
Thank you. You're not the first person to say that. And so I love when people say that. So it kind of just feels that whole emotion and, So it was a blast just watching songs come together and like everyone's input and everyone kind of feeling ownership of the song. So when we released it, it was something we've been very proud of. And then it's crazy because now we would slip that in, then because it has that kind of train beat, then you see like people dancing to it you know, like, and even like line dancing, like, oh, you can do the Black Velvet dance. I was like, I don't know what the Black Velvet dance is, but that's what they'll dance to.
That's so crazy. They call out like, oh, you could do this dance to this. And then,
yeah. And so I'll even ask them, especially if there's like a, usually there's a lot of line dance instructors at not every place we play, but a lot of most honky tonks will have that. And so if it's a new single and we haven't really, I'll say like, hey, what dance was that? And so then I write it down. So then I know what to tell people to dance to our original music.
Have you ever gotten it wrong? Where you're like, oh, I suggested the wrong dance, and now it's just
crazy. There's some places. Well, it's like a weird thing because you can dance. It's not always the same song. If the beat's close enough, some places will dance one way to a song, and then at a different club or honky tonk, but we prefer to do this dance. It's close enough. So it's kind of like you think it's an exact science, but there's a lot of personality or personal choices. So it's like it can kind of flow. So it's something we have to continually to learn. And like even when you think you know the song, I like to ask other people because like, ooh, maybe there's other options that I don't know about for this song.
That's funny. Have you ever written to that like style of line dancing? You're like, I need to write a song that's a Black Velvet dance.
Yeah. Well, I haven't picked an exact song necessarily, but I do like look at certain beats, and then I kind of let them still choose. But I know, like, hey, you know, we were talking about it's really great to write to emotion and stuff, but there are some times you want to write like, hey, we need a big fun song. You know what I mean? We just need a fun song that we like playing. And I still, of course, try to make it like an interesting song that I'm writing about something that I think would be cool and fun. But it's a kind of like a different thing. I'm kind of, at first it was very like out of the water experience because I was used to only writing songs I really was like sad about or mad about. Right. And but like, so it's like, how do you make a song sound good if it's just supposed to be cool and fun?
Yeah, you know what's funny? I find a lot of songwriters are like, how do I write a happy song? I don't know what that feels like. I'm just so used to like emoting my pain and my tragic affair.
It's true. It's true, because then you're second guessing, is that cool? Am I cool enough? Are my rhymes cool enough? But then I find like, you know, if you still try to make a story, like I always think of a story. Even if, you know, like is the song progressing? Is there a beginning, middle, and are my verses progressing? And I was like, is it interesting? Is it, you know, even if it's just like, hey, like I gave, like the Live Wire song that I gave you is, I think, one of the songs I gave suggested is like, what about just like, hey, well, that girl that you is like, she's a live wire. Like she's too hot to handle kind of stuff. You know, like what is that like when she comes in the dance floor? What's that like when you're trying to date her? It's like, so you're still, hey, that's a real experience. We've all had that. I mean, if you're lucky, you've had that where you're like, man, that girl drives me crazy. Like, why? I can't even hardly think. It's like, so that's still a real place.
Crazy. It makes me feel like Black Velvet dancing, bro.
Yeah. So you're still coming from a real place. Right. And then, but now it's like, hey, we need to make this a rockin' song that has a cool vibe so people can dance to. Because we're a country band, but we're a country rock band. You know what I mean? So we want to have cool solemn moments and outlaw moments, but we want to have a, like cool like shake, you know, raise your glass in the air and shake your booty. And even if you don't know how to line dance, we want you to dance. You know, we want you to do any. We always tell people we're not biased. Dance any way you want when we're playing. We just want to rock out with you.
So you know I can't Black Velvet dance to every song, or I can? Are you giving me that Black Velvet dance? No,
you can do some. If you Black Velvet dance, I bet the whole room will go like, let's go ahead and do it.
I'm gonna lead that no matter what. No matter if you're playing a power ballad or what, I'm like, Black Velvet dance, let's do this. I'm just gonna call them out. People will be like Black Velvet dancing all over this place.
Yeah.
Well, you know, so let's go back now. You started this band.
Okay.
You've been working with all these musicians. Mm-hmm. Tell me, like, what was one of the first, like, obstacles you went through as an artist or a band together, just, like, figuring out what direction, where to play, how often to play. Tell me, like, a little bit about that, mm-hmm. that part of the journey.
You know, I think there was... me and Chelsea, one of the other female vocalists, we're the only ones that were very familiar with country per se, because I was collecting musicians from all genres. And then because I kind of feel good music of any kind, like you have influence. Like I don't want you just to like George Strait. Like my guitar player who met Don, he's like a total metalhead and punk head about music. I go, but that's like, I want that in this.
Right.
You know what I mean? So but then that does lead to when we're first starting out, like what type of music we should play. And sometimes I'm like, no, guys, really, they're going to want to dance to this. And they're like, no, I don't think so. I was like, no, you don't understand. To a country crowd, this is a danceable song. You know what I mean? If it hits the right vein, you know what I mean? And so we've had that kind of learning process, but you know, so over the 4 years we're like, that has been the cool thing of kind of like, oh, this must be what it's like if you're a Nashville band and you're starting out in covers. Like you're getting to know your crowd, you're getting to know what people dance to. And so I always tell people, like, I love that we started this way, and I feel lucky that we're in a genre where that's acceptable, because like unfortunately, like in other genres, it's like, if you start as a cover band, you're not a real band. Or like, you're just a cover band. You can never, if you try to throw an original, they're like, who? We don't want your original, because you just play Sublime covers all day. Like, that's no...
But isn't that crazy? Like let's talk about that for a second, because I find this kind of interesting. It's like, people love cover bands, but like, the original bands that those, you know, those cover bands were originally bands that nobody had ever heard of. People will probably tell them those bands, hey, can you play us a cover song of some other band? And it's like, it's so weird how marketing works, because let's take Sublime. Before Sublime was known, and you know, they were playing gigs where they were playing original songs that people did not know. And I'm sure they were getting requests to play cover songs, which is like, why would you ask Sublime to cover songs when they play such great songs of their own? Now you have cover bands where people are giving requests. It's such an odd way of it's an odd part of entertainment, because it's like, you don't know that's the next Prince or that's the next Sublime or next, you know, Blowfish or whatever it is. You know what I mean? Yeah. But it's like, people like to, they like what's familiar, even if like most artists are ahead of the curve playing original songs. Like, you're playing Westbound Train. People don't know that could be a hit in a year or 2 years.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, they start requesting that to other bands, but it's like, when they hear it, they're not sure because it's unfamiliar. Yeah. It's like, people have to be more comfortable with that unfamiliarity. You know what I mean? Like,
100%.
Don't hate something because you don't know it. Love it because it's different and because it's new, and like, embrace. Yeah. Like, that's something I think, if people understood that little concept, artists would have an easier time as performers or just playing out, you know? And I'm saying, like, venting, but go ahead.
I hear you. I talk about it all the time. Well, it's been a very interesting thing venturing to do both. And like, we have quite an awesome community of songwriters out here. And like, and I think I mentioned, Don and I, with our friend Amy, another friend of ours, Amy, like, we do a songwriter show out here where it's like no genre, just everybody. Because I love the process. I love the show that you do at the Hotel Cafe now.
Thanks,
and
man. Stuff.
And but it's like, I just said, look, there's no genre. Let's just play, you know, songwriter original music. And so I've got to know a lot of other genres, and so it's been very interesting watching. Like, they're like, we don't get enough gigs. I'm like, we'll add some cover songs. They're like, no, if we add covers, they're not going to think we're an original band. And like, we only want to pursue it. And so I've just learned there's like this like invisible line between original bands and cover bands. And then you have cover bands, but now you have tribute bands, which is even a whole other kind of subgenre of cover bands. Like, oh, we're going to be a tribute band and we only play Queen, or we only play Luke Combs, you know? And it's like, oh, well, that's kind of like limiting. But like, people pay a lot. There's like this popularity growing. And there's no knock on that. If you can do that, that is great.
I mean, a lot of people use it as a scapegoat. I mean, I won't say scapegoat, but like, it's a way to like, okay, I don't have to, I can ensure I can play for a lot of people and play, you know, a great gig that pays well.
Yeah.
But I'm always like, man, but you could also do that with original music if you just pushed it a little harder.
I think that was always, even when I was starting this band, I think that was something I knew I wanted to do eventually, do original music. And so rather be like, if I had to do a band, any that wasn't country, I'd probably want to be like Gaslight Anthem, because they're like a modern rock. If Bruce Springsteen had a band today and started one today as a 20-year-old or 30-year-old guy, it would be Gaslight Anthem. And like that. So that's like, oh, that's my band. I knew they'd be so much harder to start playing. And so right now, like country, I knew like in this genre, it's songwriter heavy. I love the stories. I love the struggles. I mean, I love country music. But I knew like, hey, it's just more sociably acceptable because of how things are in Nashville. Everyone talks about it. Dierks Bentley, like Luke, you know, Carrie Underwood, other people's like, hey, I start by playing the gigs in Nashville and Broadway and playing everybody else's, and eventually you get discovered, you know, like Eric Church, everybody. It's more like people are like, oh, country music, you can eventually do originals. But I don't know why other genres aren't like that. If we were playing, you know, Gaslight Anthem covers, but all of a sudden want to do our originals, it's not the same. I don't know why, but it's like that just because of how things have been in the past. So it's definitely a benefit for ours. And then seeing more so is like, I feel bad. There's so many talented bands in my area, like amazing bands. But they're not getting to share their music with that many more people because they're playing at a lot of the same places. And so like the same people are coming, which is amazing. But right. We have this advantage, like, hey, we get to go, we're going to go to Cowboy Palace, and then we're going to be at Brandon and I, and then we're going to be at Buckle, and then we're going to be at Whiskey Republic. And so we're getting to slip in originals to like, oh, well, 200 other people here and 300 people there, right. 500 people there that like we would never get to play for those people if we were just doing originals. Oh, but because we're doing both.
It's definitely a longer road.
Yeah. It's a longer road. Amen. Yes, exactly. But it's harder. And it's like, but the backslide about being in country is like, I was so glad when I met your friend John at the songwriter thing, because I was like, oh, you like country and Americana, please. You're in California too. Let me introduce myself, because I need to find other people if we're going to build, if I was going to have an all original show, which we've done some and opened up for some people. But, you know, out here in Southern California, it's the original country artists are kind of rare too. So it's like,
that's very
true. I want to like collect people like your friend John, who's simply amazing.
He is amazing. I love
it. Yeah, he's amazing.
A long time, and every time he plays, I'm like, man, why aren't you doing this all the time? You know, it's just like, he's just got that thing. You know what I mean? He's got the vibe. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And so definitely want to like, the other people that I see doing original music, like they kind of like build their tribe around them of like people who will fill their bill. Like, hey, like you kind of like build your show. Like, hey, I'm going to headline and these are my friends that are going to open up for me and right. We're going to perform over here. And so it's like, hey, we need more country Americana or some alt country or outlaw friends to kind of build the sound around us for a whole show. And so that's kind of been the next thing, because I mostly only know other cover bands that are country. So we're kind of the few that do originals in my area that I know so far. Now, I know we're not the only ones, but so if you're out there and you do country and you do originals, like hook me up. Yeah, like, yeah. Let's talk.
Reach out to names. Come on, people.
Yeah.
Who do you want to play us next?
Yeah. Well, we talked about a party song, so let's play Live Wire.
Here's Live Wire by Westbound 66.
Never saw this coming, but I ain't running. She's all or nothing when she wants something. I can't breathe when she's with me, but now I need her desperately. She's this baby. Upside down, only she knows how. The turn won't kiss to all of this. I hate to admit, but I'm helpless. She's a real live wire.
that's rocking. Man.
Thanks.
A little bit of a different direction, which I like. I like that you're going to, like, it's almost kind of like almost a poppy like Americana.
Yeah. Pop.
Tell me about the influence behind this song.
That was definitely like, let's do a rock song. Like, you know what I mean? And definitely the whoa, whoa, whoas. That's me wanting to have a Bruce Springsteen whoa, whoa, whoa in there. And then I leaned a lot on my friend Donald's, like, hey, I got this song and a few lyrics. I want you to just go nuts with your guitar and like that vibe. And then, of course, Max, who mixed it, he had the idea of like, well, let's add a few more. He called it the Gucci Gang. Let's add it where it almost sounds like a crowd yelling it in the back and like kind of like a big group like harmony in the back. And I mean, so it was really a group effort, like from beginning to end. You know, the girls adding, of course, the harmonies and stuff, but like just like building that song. So I mean, because to write that song, I had a chord progression and some cool verses. You know what I mean? But I mean, when it's a cool song, now you're really leaning on your band. Like, okay, let's make it. It has to be catchy. It has to be an earworm. It has to be something that people can. They instantly know, can sing along to after they hear the verse just once. You know what I mean? Where it's like, it has that catchy rhymes and stuff. And so that was very much like a group effort, 100%.
Well, I like too, it's like, you know, I think a good band is like a jambalaya. It's like got a whole bunch of different influences. It's got like a little bit of spice. It's got a little bit of like sweet and savory kind of all mixed into one thing to make it have like a colorful sound and vibe. And I think you guys accomplished that with just like kind of going in different directions. I think that's what makes a good band great, when you have kind of like different directions that people be like, oh, that's kind of a hybrid of this and this. And I like it. You know what I mean? It's like, sometimes I'll take influences of artists that I love. Like, let's say it's the Beatles, or let's say it's like Dave Matthews, or let's say it's, you know, who knows, U2. And I'll put it into a song and you know, somebody will come up to me and be like, I really love that song. And like in my mind, I'm like, oh, you're a fan of the U2? And they're like, yeah, how did you know? I'm like, because I'm taking ingredients from all these artists.
Yeah, yeah.
Or styles or whatever, just to make it different and make it my own, you know? So I like that you guys are doing that too. Do you guys ever hit heads where it's like, no, it's got to be country and not, you know, progressive or whatever, you know?
I mean, every now and then, I mean, we're really good that we talk about it all the time, that we're lucky that we get along so well for a band. Like, it's been 4 years now, and the conflict has been, there's always going to be some conflict when you're doing stuff, just like families and stuff. You're going to have moments, but how do you resolve them? But deep down, we love each other and like we want things to be successful. So we listen to each other, but we definitely have moments like artistic decisions where it's like, I don't like where that's going. You know, let's reset, or let's put a pin in this song and we'll come back to it and then maybe come at it fresh, or like, oh, I don't want to speed it up, or I don't want it to go that slow. You know, so sometimes that has to happen. Cause I mean, and then being the songwriter, we all put our fingerprints on it, but I definitely feel like I have to be a driver sometimes, where the first few songs, like we haven't released them. It was like a personal, like me just recording some songs for my dad, which was a very cool thing that Don helped me with. But like a lot of times I was so excited to collaborate, I never wanted to say no to suggestions.
Right.
And then, and the song still came out good, but it wasn't what I still pictured or felt. And so I've had to learn, like, just because I want to be a team player, it doesn't mean I had to say yes to every idea and every suggestion. Sometimes it's okay to say, that's a good idea, but I don't know if that's what I really want for this project or for this song. So can we try something else? But as a team player, I do make sure, well, let's try it. Let's hear it. And let me, I know, and I'll even sit on it. Maybe if someone's really determined, like I'll hear anything, but sometimes I do need to go like, oh, I don't know if I want that one, but I know, hey, but I tell them all the time, if something just sounds like crap, please tell me. If I'm determined and you're like, no, this just is not working, I'll veto that too. But it's okay for me to veto as well, where I think an early songwriter and being in a band early and collaborating for the first times, I was really nervous to say no
right.
about something.
You're like, sure, we can make it a polka. That's cool.
Yeah, yeah. Whatever you think. I just want to get it done. And then, but then that's something different.
Well, let's play Joshua Tree's next. I don't want to make sure I get them all in before we run out of time. Here's Joshua Tree's by Westbound 66. Perfect.
Streets of this desert town, and your sweet perfume when you leaned on me. I can't count all the nights we sat and dreamed about our lives and all the things I did see.
Man, that was awesome. Rocking. Oh,
thank you.
Very hooky, very like melodically, just like accessible, great arrangement. Tell me what went into the little bit of that production and the writing and the inspiration behind it.
That song was like just me trying to write. I knew I wanted to write a song about that kind of just identified growing up out here in Palmdale in the desert, and Joshua Tree's so iconic and stuff, and just capturing, you know, those personal moments of like those first loves that you have and you think it's going to grow up and like be together and stuff. And so that was like just like where I was with the song. And like there's parts that are real about me and there's parts that serve the song, you know, like I was saying earlier, it doesn't have to all be autobiographical. And but then when I took that to the band and we actually started singing over the lockdown. And so we actually like our we blew up kind of on this thing called quarantine karaoke during there. And like we went from 300 followers to 3,000 followers.
Oh, wow.
3,500 followers actually on our Facebook because we were singing Westbound Train and Joshua Trees and among some other originals. And that was one of the ones that the people, when we would play it in these like chat rooms and Facebook, they're like, oh, that Joshua Tree song, that Joshua Tree song. So when the lockdown was over, I was like, guys, we got to record Joshua Trees. Like, that's the next song. Like, they're like, especially the girls too, because they're like, anything that has that hard harmony, they're like, that's the one.
Right.
And, but that was a collaborative effort. You know, there's little things in there where, you know, Max is using his expertise because he's such an accomplished musician. He's like, hey, we could go this way and it's going to add this dynamic when we're going out instead of repeating the progression. If we go to this F sharp instead, it adds that kind of like nice, almost church like outro and stuff. And then Don had like this idea. We both love the Killers. It's like, let's just make this bridge, this like long Killers kind of bridge, where we're just holding it, dot, 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 dot. And now you're going to, we wanted to maybe do something that was repetitive, but it ended up kind of being, but I instead, at not quite as repetitive as we set out to do, but still like just a different breakdown than anything we've done, where we're, you know, we're saying like, you know, holding here was like holding the wind and like I just smile and grin kind of stuff. But it still just ended up just, we all collaborated so good. I think it's probably one of the most collaborative songs we've done so far. Like, we all added our own fingerprints. And it's probably one of my favorite songs we've done as a band because of that.
Well, where can people find you online and where are you playing next? Where can people find you out in the real world, too?
So we have Facebook and Instagram, we're Westbound 66. Our tag is Westbound_66 on Instagram. We're playing the Brandon Iron, the world famous Brandon Iron, which I seriously love. It's in San Bernardino. Everyone's played there. Morgan Wallen, Taylor Swift, Eric Church, Willie Nelson. They've been around forever. We're playing there this Saturday. And so we would love people to come out and hear us out there.
Well, James, I love your sound. I love your vibe. You got a great songwriting style. You got a great band. We're going to have you back on Wake Up Hollywood, too. We usually have everybody come back around 9 or 10 months or whenever they have a significant.
Oh, sweet. I'd love to. Thank you. Yeah.
To have you back again. It was great to cross paths with you at Songwriters in the Round last week, which I was so happy to meet you. But, yeah, man, we're going to have you on one of those bills, too, soon. But
I can't wait. Yeah, let me know.
On behalf of Sam, myself, and James, we'll see you guys next week. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Check out Westbound 66, and I'm sure they're going to have lots of new music coming out. Right? Right, James?
Oh, yeah. Hey, already on Spotify and Apple iTunes and all that stuff, so find us there, too. But we got more coming out real soon.
All right. Well, stay tuned. And on behalf of James, myself, and Sam, we'll see you guys next week. Peace and love. Take care of each other.
Thank you.
Listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.